talking to my people, yeah.
With your life, running like a rare disease. Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history has a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Good morning, family. I hope everything is well with you this morning. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you had a chance to do what you wanted to do, needed to do, have to do, and must do. And more importantly, I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, you still had to do it anyway. And so given that reality, I hope you had a chance to go out and do the things you wanted to do and had a great weekend. I'm getting some feedback here that's very disturbing. Let me do that. Okay. Some of those things when they just kind of throw you off, you throw you off your flow. You know, you got things that you know you want to do, and then you want to get the information in, and you want to say this, that, and the other. Then there's something that kind of throws you off your flow. Yeah, but it's okay. We're going to keep vibing. And other programs right here on Time for an Awakening. We are part of the Time for an Awakening family, the Motherland Media. We have three entities on Time for an Awakening family, African Perspectives, Us Lifting Us, and Black Reality Think Tank. So this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. All the times I'm going to give are Eastern times, so you can figure it out for yourself, if whatever you're listening from. And then on Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then on Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People. Revive is a millennial program, young sister Revive, Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. So it's an interesting program. So that's a good guess, you know, and so check that out. But on Thursdays, Us Lifting Us with Brother DJ, Baba Kimbizi, Baba Akima, and Sister Nanana, and Sister Shay, and Baba Thurman, all the good brothers and sisters. And more importantly, you, hopefully you become a member of Us Lifting Us. And then on Friday after my program, Friday evening from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. is Time for an Awakening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening has outstanding guests, good programming. And of course, this is the video stream. And so if you go online to timeforanawakening.com, you can listen to previous recorded programs on Time for an Awakening. Saturdays, SST, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And that's 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And I called in on Saturday to talk with Troy a little bit. He was talking, had some good conversation. And so check him out on Sports Talk on Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And Saturday afternoon is
from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, my good friend and brother, Dr. William Rogers, every Saturday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank. And then on Sundays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. Once again, her program is on Sundays, on Wednesdays and Sundays. And then Sunday evening from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. So check them out as well. Also, too, this Saturday, it's the Black Power Awards. The Black Power Awards will be happening this Saturday, and that's with Brother DJ. He has been the leader of it. I'm going to have him as my guest on Wednesday's program so you can know more about it. But it's the second annual Black Power Awards, a celebration of blackness. And it was really good last year. I didn't really get a chance to see too much of the awards program. I was manning a booth for Us Lifting Us, making all those who were in attendance aware of what's happening and being a part of Us Lifting Us. And I'm quite sure they'll be there again this year. Like I said, Brother DJ was organizing the Black Power Awards effort, a celebration of black excellence. It's this Saturday, the 18th. It's going to be, last year, it was at this center that the Bonner brothers, you know, the Bonner brothers are the brothers who do hair. And of course, they became very, very, very wealthy in that respect. And they have a center out there by the off of I-20 going west. I-20 going west from Atlanta, it's right near the Great America Amusement Park. And it was a fantastic venue, beautiful facility. I was so impressed. And but they're not having it there this year. They're having it at the Downtown Sheraton Hotel. The Downtown Sheraton Hotel. That's where they're having it at. 165 Cortland Street, Northeast Atlanta. And but Brother DJ will give you all of the information. Hosting this year will be David Banner and Ernestine Johnson. David Banner and Ernestine Johnson will be hosting. Some of the award honorees are Akeem Allah, Dr. Rita Marley, and Dr. Mutulu Shakur, and I'm quite sure many others from within and around the Atlanta area and nationally. Last year, they had it where it was set up. I didn't get a chance to go into the auditorium while the program was on. But I did. They had an area where people could go and order food and so forth. And they had seats and screens there about the proceedings that were going on in the auditorium. And I checked out a few awardees. And it was outstanding, really good program. But at that time, I just had knee surgery, and so my knees were bothering me tremendously. So I had to go home. I had to go home and ice up, you know. But I'm really looking forward to this year's program, and it is going to be this Saturday, November 18th, here in Atlanta, the second annual Black Power Awards at the Sheraton Downtown. All the good information will be provided when Brother DJ, but you can go online to blackpowerawards.com, blackpowerawards.com, and get all the good information. I'm going to do the same and just see who some of the honorees are going to be and how the program is going to be ran. But I really look forward to it. So the blackpowerawards.com. I had a thing I wanted to deal with, but I'm going to tell you, sometimes you know, you go online to the sources that I use, such as blackagendareport.com, Black Atlanta Star, The Root. Last week I read from The Root on that piece on Umar Johnson. It came from a Root contributor, Brother Herod, and it was disturbing to me. I'm sorry. You know, it was disturbing to me because, like I was saying last Friday, that in our struggle for liberation, self-determination, and sovereignty for African people and those who profess to be Pan-Africanists, we must not, and I repeat, we must not have any hint of impropriety, because it really hurts what we're doing as a people, any hint of impropriety. And so what I'm saying to us is that whatever we profess to do in the name for our people, there must be some integrity and some transparency. There must be the ability to say, and if we are called into question for some reason, we must be man enough, a woman enough, I would hope and pray, that we would lay bare what it is that we said that we were going to do. And if that did happen for whatever reason, explain that and let's move on. Because, see, not only are there agent provocateurs, because the real enemy of our people is not us. Someone ought to stop that. We are not our own worst enemy. Stop it. I hate that. The real enemy of African people and Africans' rise is Europeans. It's Caucasians. Crackers. Okay? Not us. But there are some of us who act on their behest, act for them, and would sabotage anything that we do for them. But the bottom line is, it is not us. And so when some of us, and I hope there's a small number of us, do that, I would hope and pray that they are exposed. And just like Malefi Asante and Milana Karinga, their reputation is so bad that they don't go to some of the events where our people are, trying to plan and discuss the issues and so forth. I used to see Malefi Asante and Milana Karinga, I've seen them multiple times, but today you don't see them, because of things they've done. Because that is, it's not what you say, brothers and sisters. It's what you do. It's what you do. It's your actions, just your behavior. It's not what you say. Because a lot of us are so articulate and so smooth. Our delivery is so tight, words just flow and they're in sync and they make sense. And then where some of us become enamored or become and like, wow, that's so beautiful. Da, da, da. And then of course, come to find out it ain't what he ain't and she ain't what about they saying. They're agent provocateurs. They're prevaricators. They're liars. They're hypocrites. And what they do continues to serve European, Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. What they do helps maintain and sustain the privilege that Caucasians have created for themselves. They may get some crumbs. They may get a position. They may do a number of things. Has they sold their people out? Has they lied to them? Has they done some things that hurt our cause or put us back? They may do that. That is true. But the reality is that when it happens, we expose them and we continue to move on. That's why I like that. Well, I probably have every program I've had in the last 3 years since I've been on radio, I've said something about Dr. Clark. I mentioned his name in some form or fashion, and because I think if anybody who's listened to me know that I have an affection and a deep admiration and respect for Dr. John Henry Clark, the great Nana, the great Jetty. But, Dr. Clark understood clearly what we were up against. That's why he didn't talk about begging Caucasians. He didn't talk about none. He understood clearly. In fact, he said the only salvation and I believe this, brothers and sisters, is not any theologies that we have. I know that for, particularly for Christians, their only salvation is the belief in Jesus Christ. I got that. I'm going to read that. I'm read something on that in a minute. But the only salvation that we have is a dynamic Pan-Africanism that is technological, spiritual, and cultural. A dynamic Pan-Africanism that is technological, the technology of today, learning how to use that, you know. In fact, that's what I was going to talk about, but Atlanta Black Star kicked that particular piece off and brought on a whole new page, and that piece is not on there. And I'm like, wow, they keep it. Of course, if you can remember, that happened to me some weeks back. You know, I'm ready to talk about something I read on it this morning, and then when I go to it on my tablet, bam, it ain't there. I'm like, wow. You know, sometimes like I try to save it, you know, and I do that, but I just thought it would be there. And it was basically on the technology that is displacing workers. And it's something that I've talked about previously, and I'm going to find that article, and I might be able to do that on Wednesday, probably before our discussion with Brother DJ, or after, whichever comes first, with Brother DJ talking about the Black Power Awards. But, you know, just like paying your bills, I don't pay my bills online. I go to the post office. I buy the stamps. I write out checks. I put the checks in the mail. I want the people at the post office to have a job. I know I just heard something about the post office lost so many millions of dollars. You know, well, the post office is not in the business to make money. The post office is in the business to provide a service. Our tax dollars pay for that service. Now, if it's not ran properly and there's something that could be making, you know, that could help it to function better, and if that's done, do that. But it's a good service. And now to the fact that so many people don't use the postal service, particularly to pay bills, because it's so much easier. You can do it right from your, you can get up in the morning, pull your computer up, put it on your lap, in your bed, put your information in, pay your bills. I understand that. But there are more and more people and less jobs. And that's what this article was talking about, the technology that is available. There's a commercial. I don't know if you've seen the commercial. There's a commercial with LeBron James. And some of his buddies says, LeBron, your car is here. And a car pulls up and he's looking real, looking sideways and up and down because he doesn't see a driver. He gets in the back seat and the car drives him around. He pulls back in front where his partners are and says, I got to get one of these. The reality is that the technology that has been developed over the years are displacing workers. I mentioned this story sometime before about when it happened to me in the late 60s. As I was a dishwasher at a restaurant. And the restaurant bought a automatic dishwashing machine. And so as I was, you know, learning to operate that, and of course, that was nothing, rinse the dishes off, stack them in the racks, and then throw them through the machine and let them air dry and then stack them and da-da. Well, they said, well, you know what? The busboy could do this. So, hey, see ya. Replaced by automation. I remember when in Milwaukee. Milwaukee was the beer capital of America, maybe of the world, who knows? Because they had Milwaukee was settled by Germans and Poles, and they had all these German beer barons, and these cats had multiple breweries in the city of Milwaukee, and excuse me, and one was Blatt's. They had Slits, Blatt's, Pabst's, Miller's, and a host of others, old style, Kettleman. So anyway, Blatt's had opened up a new brewery, which is off the expressway, I-43 in Milwaukee, in our hood. In fact, right in a project. And I was like, wow, a new brewery that's going to have a lot of jobs. You know, your people ran that brewery? 45 people. It took only 45 people to run that. Everything was automated. You know? And that's what's going to be happening. That's why I'm saying we need to go home to provide jobs for our people. Africa needs infrastructure. These are jobs. Africa needs roads to be built, sewage systems, electrical systems, green energy, renewable energy, all of these things, wind turbines, solar. Africa needs all of this. Africa needs us as African people with the wherewithal to come there with the African brothers and sisters there to build Africa. Do you think the way we've been treated here, that somehow when they continue to decrease the ability for, of jobs because of technology and artificial intelligence, that somehow our people will get jobs? When the history is proven, Malcolm said it best, of all our studies, history is best qualified to reward our research. Look at the history. You know the cliche, last hired, first fired? So do you really think, given what's about to happen? That's why I'm saying, now I understand a lot of us can't grasp what I'm saying, but I know there's a good number of us who do. And it's, to me, it's important that we espouse this, but more importantly, prepare to do this. That's why I'm saying these weekend schools can prepare us so that we go home. We're going home to work. We just ain't leaving America unskilled. We're going to work. We're going to build roads, highways, railroads, ports, towns, cities, all of it. Just like the Arabs in the so-called Middle East, because of all that wealth that they have accumulated, they import help. They go to the Philippines to get, because they're too rich to do any work. But things need to be done. Things need to be built. Look at Abu Dhabi. Look at Dubai. Look at Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates. Look at the development that has gone on in these places. Because of their wealth. We have more wealth than they do. We have everything that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they damn it don't want to pay for. I mentioned the Chinese. And it is said about the Chinese that how they're operating, they will be the power in the world. America is deeply in debt to China. I don't give a damn what Trump says, how he says it. America is indebted to China. I don't want nobody to be indebted to Africa, and I don't want Africa to be indebted to anybody else. All the things that they say that have happened to the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, should be kicked to the damn curb for what has happened to us. We owe nobody. In fact, Dr. Clark, only thing we owe anybody is a good ass whooping. That's what we owe to everybody who has exploited Africa, Africa's human resource and mineral resource. But brothers and sisters, the time is of the essence. We have to do it now. We have to do it now. Give us a call. We're here, 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832, and you can join this conversation if there's something that you want to talk about, or is there something that I said that you want clarity to, or you could add to it. Please give us a call. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world you can listen live. But if you can't listen live, we're developing the archives that you can go to through Black Talk Radio Network.com. My good friend, Brother Jeff. Brother Jeff is outstanding. Really appreciate that, brother. Really do. And you will hear Brother Jeff again, because I may not just go on a trip. I just may have Brother Jeff help me out and just take a day or two and let him broadcast. You know, let him come up with something. So last week, last Friday, I mentioned very briefly about about Dr. Obadeli Kambone, who is in Ghana. Excuse me. Little remnants of something that's trying to jump on me, man. I got to take care of it. You can probably hear them all. So I'm going to remedy that when we get to this break. But anyway, he mentioned in the article, he's teaching at the University of Ghana. And he mentioned the fact that the religion, the Christian religion, is plagiarized. The Christian religion has taken from other religions. And like I said, and the reason why I speak about it is because if you say that you are historical, that you are factual, that these people lived and so forth, if that's what you say, you know, then I'm going to challenge that. Prove to me. See, we can prove the ancient Kemetic people, what they did. There are tombs and temples and so forth. Their names are etched in stone. Their name is etched in stone. They ain't even, let alone all the papyri. And a lot of it has been, of course, lost with the burning of the libraries and so forth. So, you know, but then, of course, the book of coming forth by day, which Caucasians called the Book of the Dead because they saw, they found it in a tomb. But it was the book of coming forth by day. A lot of documentation within that. So it is clear. But yet, Christianity wants to say that what we have is pure and bona fide and real. But if it is, where is the proof to that fact? And I know the argument that Christians have, of course, is they're saying, well, you know, with this religion, I'd rather believe in it, give my money to it, have faith in it, celebrate its holidays, all of that, I'd rather believe and it not be true than to not believe and it be true. Because to not to believe and it be true, oh, then that means I'll burn in hell. I don't know, for some of y'all, to me, this is hell right here. Hell on earth. So we got a caller. Good morning, caller. How you doing this morning?
Yes, Brother Oshie. Good morning.
Good morning.
Marcus.
Oh, yeah. What's going on? Oh, yeah, I recognize the voice, brother. I got you. How are you today?
I'm doing all right, brother. Just a little bit chilly. But
a little bit chilly for you? It's a little chilly in Memphis?
Yeah, it's a little bit chilly, but, you know, but it's all right.
Good.
You know, you mentioned something a while ago when you made me laugh, you know. But, you know, Christianity, this the type of Christianity we're practicing today has kept us in a frozen psychological state of people. I remember Dr. Van Sertima, you know, he said that, you know, he said that we, you know, and I mean, even in Memphis here where I live, I have lived in New York before. I know I'm here in Memphis. And it's the same thing. It's like every little corner you go, there is a church.
Yeah.
You know, there is a church. And, you know, everybody looking for salvation. Say, oh, you're going to get yours in the by and by. Don't worry about this now. In fact, the more you suffer here on earth, is the greater your reward in heaven. And it's the same thing going on in Africa. And, you know, I belong to some groups in Nigeria. In fact, they kicked me out of the groups because, you know, I was coming down on them and said, look, you know, you guys over there, you're fighting each other for religion. You're fighting each other, tribalism, political, you know, politics. You know, you need to get yourself together, you know. I mean, you know, the African tribal system is a good system, you know, within the tribe. But we got to extend it out of the tribe, you know, to let it work for everybody. But, you know, they're in the same predicament we are psychologically as a people. You know, they're looking for salvation. Everybody, well, you're going to get yours in the by and by. Give it, the more you give, the more you get, you know, and it's soon be over. The rapture soon be coming. It's sad. But, you know, you said about how we move ahead, how we advance as a people. And you are correct. We have to find a way to marry our capital here in the West and the technology with the natural resources and the labor pool of our people on the continent. We have to find a way to get our people here, especially involved in Africa. Because one of the reasons the Chinese are here is because we ain't there. You see? You know, and that's, them people, the Africans ain't going to lay down and die. You know, they waiting on us. I remember in 1992, when Namibia got its independence, and, you know, it was a fervor going on, it was, you know, at that time, you know, I can speak for New York, I was living in New York at that time. Dr. Jeffries was there, everything was in a fervor. But during that time, too, the Namibia just got their independence. And then the Prime Minister for Namibia, the President of Namibia, Sam Nujomo, came to America and said, look, come and help us to develop this country. You know, this country that is had only 1.2 million Africans at that time. Because the Germans had went there and decimated that population. In fact, that was where they practiced. They were practicing the genocide here before they took it to Europe. Because when they went to Namibia, it was 25 million black people living in Namibia. And when they left in 1990, it was 1.2 million people. So they wanted to just, you know, clean the slate. But there is always a slip between the cup and the lip. And our people, you know, they got their political freedom. And this man came to New York and said, come and help us build this country. Come and make money. Because Namibia is loaded with diamonds. There's so much diamonds. They just do surface mining. There's so many diamonds there, so many Kimberley fields. And he came, you know, and we as nationalists were saying, come, let's help us. to go to Namibia to help build Namibia. And you know, our people turned their back on it. Our people rejected it. You know, and look at the condition we are in today. And it's, it's getting worse for us as a people. So, you know, we have to find a way to make a connection with the motherland and join that economic and cultural umbilical cord. Because if Africa dies, you could forget it, Brother Oshie. If Africa dies,
that's right, Brother Marcus.
We finished.
It is. We are. We are done. We are done as a people. That's what I'm saying. The salvation for us as African people lies in the fact that we have a home base that we need to deal with. But we keep begging Caucasians because we've been here so long and our memory, our African memory. There's some of us who don't even want to believe that we're African. There's some of us now. There's some of us who don't want to claim. And there's some of us who don't even want to say that we're African. We'd rather be black. Or some of us are saying we're indigenous to this land, that we were not Africans, that the African enslavement, that the African Holocaust did not happen. This is how crazy this situation is getting. What I would propose, and if I wish I had the money or could get the people together to do it, is have a real Pan-African conference where we finally lay it down and say, this is what it is. This is the direction. Now, those of us who agree to that, we're going to follow that. Anybody who want to agree, that's fine. You go do what you want to do. But that group that has established that mindset of Pan-Africanism, of working and teaching and building, we're moving forward. And our forward direction is to go home to build Africa. There is so much work to be done. If you're listening to me earlier, I was talking about the automation. I was going to read an article that on how the artificial intelligence and all of the automation is going to kill jobs and kill the prospects of many people, particularly minimal kinds of jobs that are repetitive and so forth. I mean, when they're talking about building these cars and these trucks that are driverless. So there's a lot of prospects that doesn't look good for us. And I'm saying the only future, the only salvation for us is to embrace Pan-Africanism, but more importantly, actively go home and to build. Work with brothers and sisters on the continent to build highways, roads, train stations, ports, city, towns, hospitals, schools, so forth, is to build Africa. But I also know that Africa is deeply fragmented. The Organization of African Unity, which should be the paramount organization on the continent, should bring these countries together, bring these people together, regardless of any quote tribalism. Because I think there's three things that really hurt us on the continent: mysticism, tribalism, and superstition. It just really hurts, and these fragments really hurts African people. We are one African people, and this is what many of our scholars and leaders were trying to say to us then and now, that we are one African people. And what's most important for us is to develop what we have. Now, you mentioned Namibia and the diamonds that it has. Well, unfortunately, even still in today in Namibia, Germans are in control, just like Caucasians are in control in South Africa. You know, we've gained independence, but when you are still in control of the monetary end, the money, and you are still in control of the security, the police or whatever, then that's who's in control. You can have all the dark faces and high places you want, but who controls those things? Those are the ones who are in control.
Yes, because that's what happened. Because when we sent a delegation over there, and they said the finance minister, which was a German at the time, they said, "Oh, we don't need no money. Namibia don't need no money." And the country was 90% in poverty. You know, they say, you know, 60% literacy. But they tell, oh, they don't need no money. So, you know, but I said, Brother Oshi, we must. Because if we don't, then we could forget it, brother. We could forget it as a people. Just go roll over and die. And I know our people ain't going to. So we're going to have to create some type of force that's going to push our people, you know, to freedom. Because I don't think people ever just voluntarily get up and, you know, do the right thing. You're going to have to make our people do the right thing. And he said, one thing about that automation, these white folks now, you know, they what they are doing, they are setting up an economic system where they have, now they're talking about guaranteed income for their folks. So even if they go automation, they're going to make sure that their folks eat. But where do we lie in that food chain? Where do we lie? You know, Bill Gates, they're talking about overpopulation in the world. You know, oh, see, the world is too overcrowded. Who decides who lives or who dies, you know? So we're in a really, really serious situation as a people. And as the brother said, it's pan-Africanism. Are we going to perish? Anyway, brother, I'll hang up and I'll continue listening. Thank you so much for this program.
Thank you, Brother Marcus. I appreciate your contributions to this program. I appreciate you listening. Tell others I appreciate it very much. Believe me, I do, Brother Marcus. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace to you. And listen, y'all, Brother Marcus, you know he's on point, so stop it, y'all. You know the man is on point. I know you can understand him. I think he's from Jamaica. He always espouses the program of Marcus, the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, and we need to follow that program. We have everything that we need for independence. We have everything that we need for self-determination. Brothers and sisters, we have everything that we need for liberation. We have everything that we need for sovereignty for us as a people. The only thing that we need, the only thing that we need to do is develop the will, and that is the mind to do it. We have everything that we need. But our minds are not right. And what you can't conceive, many of us can't even think about us being independent. We can't even, that thought don't even, reminds me of Wattstack, you know, one of my favorite documentaries. There's a portion of Wattstack, this guy said, I've been down so long that getting up don't even cross my mind. That's hopelessness. I've been down so long that getting up don't even cross my mind. We can't even fathom. We can't even think and visualize us doing anything independent of anybody else. That's sad. We can't think of a world where it is all us at every level. We can't. You know, when these Caucasians talk about good old days, you know, they're talking about the 50s, the 40s, when there were no marches, there were no demonstrations, everybody knew their place. We stayed in our place, you know. That's what they're talking about. They had control over everything. They had towns where there was nobody but them. There were areas of cities that they made sure that this area of the city stayed. And these people stayed where they are. This is what they're talking about. This is what Caucasians are talking about, of taking back, making America great again, taking back their country. Do you remember after Barack won, the Tea Party came in because of the idea that a American African was the president of the United States? Some Caucasians talked about leaving the country if that was going to happen. And the whole idea was that to revert back to what they had before. That's what the whole idea was. The idea was that we had an environment that was all ours, and it was great, and it was beautiful. We had all the jobs. We had all this, everything, ignoring the suffering of other people. And if they had a American African person, it was just a couple. Definitely wouldn't have more than a two or three in a neighborhood. If you had that many, it might have been too damn many. Couple on the job here or there. Yet, we keep begging these Caucasians. We keep trying our best. Brothers and sisters, we have to do this. I wish there were some of us who had the wherewithal and the ability to do it, to say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have a conference, a Pan-African conference. And we're asking brothers and sisters from the continent and throughout the diaspora to come, wherever that is, if it's on the continent, if it's in the, wherever. And when we come there, the whole idea, not to debate, it's not a damn debate, is how do we now, as African people, do what's best for Africa and for Africans. Period. Those who have proposals will bring them out and then put people in charge with a timeline. We have to do this, just as Brother Marcus said, if we don't do this, we will perish. Unify or die. Have some collective unity, or we're going to die. Brothers, we're going to take a break. Brothers and sisters, and you can give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. And we can further discuss. I'm going to talk when on the second half coming back up. After I give some announcements, we will get off into the religious thing. We'll talk about why millennials are not going, they're not embracing it. We'll also talk about a little bit of what we talked about this past Friday in terms of the reason why the religious piece is not as strong as it once was. It's because the covers have been pulled off of it. But one thing Marcus mentioned, and it brought to mind, is that how deep religion, Christianity, Islam, is on the continent. And in that respect, what I am saying is that you don't put your theology before the continent. Just like Marcus Garvey, when he talked about Jamaica, he said, I wouldn't give up the continent for an island. Everything is about the continent. Just like Malcolm said, although Islam is my theology, is my religious philosophy, but I know when I come here, if I'm pushing and promoting that, we're going to have problems. We're going to have issues. So I'm saying the same thing. When we come to that conference, you could be a Christian, you could be a Muslim, Seventh-day Adventist, a Black Hebrew Israelite, 5%, whatever the hell that you want to be. But when you come there to sit at that table to discuss the issues that are affecting African people on the continent globally, all of that is in your back pocket. All of that is left at home. All of that is in the closet. Because what we're talking about is how best to serve African people and get us out of this madness. There is no other discussion. That's why every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, we talk about this, because we don't talk about this enough. And sometimes we don't talk about this damn near at all, because it's a hard discussion. Yes, I may not be the most articulate person. I've been listening. I listened to Time for Awakening a lot from the previous programs. I heard some good brothers and sisters on there. And some of them, I like to talk to Brother Elliot to see if I can bring them on my program. Some really good brothers and sisters. So there's enough of us articulating it, but now we need to coordinate it. We need to bring it together, not just in one organization. Because it's not one organization. But we need to do it under the auspices of sovereignty for African people, period. So, let us go ahead and take this break. And because I know when I come back, I'm going to feel a little bit better. Because, man, you know, these sinus problems, I can be a mother. You're listening to African Perspective. Here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Stay right here with us. Remember that number, 215-490-9832, to join the conversation. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is Girl Shot Blast, and I'm back in the building.
We believe it. If the crook was a cook, we never look, we just eat it. Got us like paraplegic, frozen stiff and depleted. Body back by the wayside, history we repeat it. Yeah, they don't like the kind of deeds. We all public enemies. The program satanic, tapping into our energies. They want super soaker, call themselves black and noble. Their position is global, so our transition is vocal. It all start with the churches. Killer bees be the workers. Missionaries, they carry the wickedness to usurpers. They all hate us and bait us. Their name is educators. Religions intimidate. So we worship and invaders. They agree to embed it. Bloodline is pathetic. Loyalty to the royalty. Second cousins are wedded. Guillotine to behead them. Yes, the queen has said it. Elohim's the legend. Away your sisters and brethren. How do you like that?
Yeah, we like that.
Ready to fight back.
Ready to fight back.
But they don't like that.
No, they don't like that.
The power be in my people and power strike back.
Awaken, can't you feel the earth shaking? We arousing 1,144 acres. No, we ain't paper chasers, more like movers and shakers. Bringing the sentence with vengeance to Mother Earth on a cake. From niggas to niggas, from rednecks to wiggers. When they try to come get us, they using your public figures. Concentrated to campus, microchip is the samplers. Unity is the key, connecting all the bandanas. Your televisions and cameras, so don't switch to the box. Microphones in your home, whether you like it or not. No, we ain't overcoming, we just slumming and bumming. Ain't recognizing your third eye is your second coming.
I know you like that. Yeah, we like that.
Ready to fight back.
Ready to fight back.
But they don't like that.
No, they don't like that.
The power be in my people and power strike back. Yeah.
So look for Houdini. I study Kundalini. Raising up through my vertebrae till I see the genie. So if your chakras are open, know that you are the chosen. 144,000 around the spell has been broken.
Shot Blast. Are you prepared to stand up for the liberation of your people?
I am.
Are you willing to fight against the wickedness and evil of this present-day system?
I am.
Wait a minute, Shot Blast. We saved your people. We brought you over here from Africa. We gave you a new name, a new culture, a new language, a new religion, a new God. So what do you say to that?
Fuck you. So power be in my people against the forces of evil. Got you looking for paradise, the eyes of the needle. So as you look for Houdini, I study Kundalini. Rising up through my vertebrae till I see the genie.
I know you like that.
Yeah, we like that.
Ready to fight back.
Ready to fight back.
What
man. We lost the confusion, believe in illusion, so no revolution could take place till you erase the false face that you embrace. Carrying loads of dead weight, we displace all over this earth, cursed with hate, still bowing down to masters who burn and castrate. We so divine, spiritual slaves, deaf and blind, but intertwined, can recognize your black signs. You think not to we rock braids and twist knots. That's not ether, galaxy rays and equinox, the soul seeker, astro signs. We leave the clock, the age of Aquarius, both shifts and rise. So you like that?
Yeah, we like that.
Ready to fight back?
Ready to fight back.
But they don't like that?
No, they don't like that.
The power be in my people and power strike back. Yeah.
Do you like that?
Brothers and sisters,
ready to
it
fight
is definitely
back.
The time. Against us, they're trying to take us down, but you must realize if you tap into your energies that they tried to keep you from, the ancestors, they have another plan. I'm calling on the ancestors, the ancestors. Come on, come on, come on. That's black science.
Now do you like that?
Yeah, we like that.
Ready to fight back?
Ready to fight back.
But they don't like that?
No, they don't like that.
My people and
pie
strike back. Yeah.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. And I appreciate that. Appreciate the opportunity to be here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And, of course, on Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And then on Thursdays, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in the spirit of Ujamaa, cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family economics. And that is from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m., Us Lifting Us, ULU. I'm very excited about the ULU Cafe that is being developed as we speak. Should be ready, hopefully, before the year's out. I hope that it would be. That would be great. Friday's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And that is 8 p.m. on Fridays, 8 p.m. in the evening from 8 to 11, time for an awakening. On Saturdays, SST, that's right, Sports Talk. Saturday Sports Talk with host Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then in the afternoon, later in the afternoon, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m., it's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. And then on Sunday, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister POC. And then, of course, on Sunday evening, wrapping up on Sunday evening, with Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And once again, this Saturday is the Black Power Awards. The Black Power Awards this Saturday will be at the Sheridan downtown here in Atlanta. We'll have Brother DJ, who's with Us Lifting Us, who has been leading the Black Power Awards. We'll have him on Wednesday to talk about it. But you can go to blackpowerawards.com, blackpowerawards.com, so you so you can learn and find out more about it, tickets and where to get them, how much they are, and all the other good stuff. Some of the awardees, who are some of the people who are going to be awarded the Black Power Awards. I know that I just saw that The Root, and they're going to be on it, tape delay day. I think it was this past weekend, The Root. They had their awards, The Root 100, sponsored. And they, of course, had the corporate sponsorship, and many other people were getting awards for various activism and so forth, categories that they were, you know. And that's good. And that's good. Just like the NAACP, the awards that they give out, you know, every year, the Image Awards. Because to me, you must celebrate yourself. That's why I don't give a damn about the Academy Awards, the Tonys, the Oscars, or any of those awards. I don't care if Caucasians recognize our excellence, because they've been in the business of destroying our excellence and robbing us and misappropriating us and all of that stuff. So I don't care. You know, I don't care if
You know, I remember the last couple of years, not last year, but year before, 2 years ago, Oscar So White, you know. In fact, Chris Rock was in a dubious position of hosting and had to come out and, you know, and with a monologue talking about how white it was in all the categories. And just like last year when the Midnight, the movie Midnight won, and they thought that some other movie won and some big mix up. And that was deep. I didn't see the movie. If you saw the movie, I still haven't seen the movie. Won Academy, just because some won the Academy Award, because there's some movies I thought, you know, are outstanding movies that did or didn't win the Academy Award as the best picture or the best actor or any other thing that they might have said. So when Brother Marcus mentioned some things about Africa, it brought me to mind of Ghana. They did a piece on some of the richest, wealthiest ministers, pastors, or whatever in Christian religion. Because I don't think, maybe I haven't talked to Brother Muhammad. Brother Muhammad has a job, but I'm going to try to get him on. We're going to talk about Islam. Because I don't think there's anybody rich in the Islamic religion like Christian religion. You know, pastors are rich. Some are not even, they went beyond rich. They're wealthy. You know, they got planes, jets. They got homes in 3 or 4 locations. And when they did the top 10, the American African ministers were not there. You know, the American African they were not there, but there are Africans in the top 10. 3 of them, I believe, if memory serves me, and all 3 were from Ghana. Not Nigeria. They were from Nigeria, and to be in the top, because you know Creflo Dollar got and T.D. Jakes and a couple of others, but these cats, their wealth is off the chain. In Nigeria, the bottom line is you would hope that the spiritual religion that you receive gives you the confidence that you should have as a human being to be the best human being that you can be. And that ain't about money. That's not about money. But see, because we live in a world dominated by Caucasians, which perpetuates individualism, materialism, greed, and violence. And that is part of the religion. Because doesn't the religion speak to you individually? How you doing, brother? I'm blessed and highly favored. How you doing, sister? I'm blessed and highly favored. Your family is gone to the dogs, craziness within your family, craziness within your community, but yet you are blessed and highly favored. Stop it. But it speaks to you individually. I accept Jesus as my Lord and Savior. Only thing that is important is Jesus. Jesus is my light, my salvation. Jesus. Because by believing in Jesus, I will be saved. I will be redeemed. I will go to heaven. If I don't believe in Jesus, I am going to hell. So all those who don't believe in Jesus, no matter what religion you subscribe, no matter how good of a human being that you truly are, you're going to hell. Why are millennials leaving the church? This is an article in the Atlanta Black Star. You know, I've always promoted Atlanta Black Star for outstanding narratives and video streams and our current updates, although they diss me on the one piece. I'm going to find that piece, though, because I wanted to read that on the technology and displacement, because I know it's going to have deep ramifications on us, because we are the semi-skilled and unskilled laborers in this society. Well, I'll find it and we'll deal with that. Let me deal with this piece. Why are millennials leaving the black church, leaving the American African church, by Ryan Douglas. The American African church has long stood at the center of American African communities as a place of worship and social advocacy. The civil rights movement saw religious leaders like Dr. Martin Luther King, Andy Young, Joseph Lowry on the front lines of marches, preaching and pushing policy reform while strengthening communities' morale through faith and fellowship. The front lines of modern racial justice movements find American African people less likely to be religiously affiliated or emphasize a role for the Christian church in activism. Although still a backbone of the community support, the church is not serving American African youth like it used to. According to a study by the Pew Research Center, 19% of American Africans under the age of 30 are unaffiliated with a religion, compared with just 7% of American Africans age 65 and older. The statistics represent a growing divide between young people and Christianity and raises concerns about its importance in the future of African liberation. The fact is, I know some brothers and sisters who are in liberation theology. My good friend, Sister Zaro Day, she's going to be performing at the Black Excellence Awards. She is outstanding in her renditions of Nina Simone, just outstanding. In fact, she was, she had a presentation off Broadway in New York 2 years ago where she performed. And it was last year that she performed. But, she attends an African-centered church here in Atlanta. And so I know that, you know, you go to the church and you see red, black, and green. You see ankhs and they pour libation to the ancestors. And they, you know, they put a black face, an African face. And some argue that the theology is human African based, you know, and so forth. You know, and that could be, there's some truth to that. But to me, who controls Christianity? Well, in our ways, nobody controls Christianity. Oh, yes, they do. Now you can go and develop your church, and fashion that church to whatever degree that you want in terms of Christian beliefs, and you can put a black face on it. You know, if that's your desire to do. But as far as I'm concerned, the damage has been done. You can put dark faces on all of the people who are supposed to be historic in the Bible, but the damage has been done, because in reality, our people, just like when I was in Ghana, seeing those billboards of Caucasian Jesus, going to a church. I went to a church service. Pictures of Caucasian Jesus. The damage has been done. The front lines of modern racial justice movements finds American African people less likely to be religious or affiliated, emphasize a role for the church in activism. Although still a backbone of the community, the church is not serving American African youth like it used to. According to the study by the Pew Research Center, 19% of American Africans under the age of 30 are unaffiliated. I mean, that means 81% are, compared with just 7% of American Africans 65 and over. So they're saying 93% of us, my age and older, are affiliated with Christian church. The statistics represent a growing divide between young people and Christianity and raises concerns about the importance of the future for African liberation. Growing up, the son of a pastor in non-denominational American African church taught me intimate lessons about the temporary nature of hardship. I used the security blanket I found in Christ as a spiritual defense against the systems of oppression, but I feel incapable of defeating on my own. I still find, however, a gap between my faith and my realities. Today's church feels mostly like an apolitical refuge, a haven of worship where hope for a better future speaks over active solutions to political strife. The Reverend Dr. Brianna Parker, preacher and founding curator of the Millennial Cafe, posits that for American African millennials, relevant ministry resists and corrects immoral policies and practices in over-policed neighborhoods, challenges police forces that lack diversity, and aggregates policies set out to destroy us. Millennials want church leaders who use faith to Millennials want leaders who use faith to imagine real solutions to social issues affecting African people. Absence from my church are lessons on how to cope and mobilize after witnessing the deaths of Philando Castile and Alton Sterling and Terrence Crutcher and countless others. We come of age in a time segregation where water fountains and bathrooms were shared between American Africans and Caucasians, and racism was socially condemned across racial lines. Our vision of racism manifests through secret employment discrimination, economic inequality, microaggressions, and a corrupt judicial system. American African people born between 1978 and 2000 were increased access to with increased access to education, have an edge in learning these systems, but still struggle to find ways to dismantle them. Because you're not supposed to. They're institutionalized. You're not going to dismantle them. You're not going to correct this system. This system is not broke. It operates the way it was intended. As social media allows us to receive, process, and pass on information faster than generations before us, we seek our religious leaders that affirm and shape our ability to speak for ourselves and rather than ones who speak on our behalf. We seek out religious leaders that affirm and shape our ability to speak for ourselves rather than the ones who speak on our behalf. James Baldwin concluded the fire next time. If the concept of God has any validity or any use, it could only be to make us a larger, freer, and more loving. If God cannot do this, then it is time we get rid of him. His theory places collective American African liberation and empowerment at the center of the faith. While the Bible contains lyrics on love, forgiveness, humility, and wisdom, it also preaches social rules written for ancient social cultural societies. The book contains passages that, when read literally, condone sexist and homophobic thought, which many millennials recognize as counter to the collective American African empowerment. A recent study by the Center for American Progress found that 56% of Americans under the age of 30 have progressive attitudes toward cultural and social values compared with 50% who are over 30. The study also found that a large margin of younger Americans do not view changes in the traditional family as a threat to society. We are inclined to use the Holy Book as a foundation and not a rule book to take from it what will help us uplift one another across intersections of identity. We're inclined to use Christianity similarly, simultaneously recognizing how it can be a damaging force and how we can use it for good. Barbara Diane Savage, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, theorizes that the American African church has a concept, has taken on a life of its own, implying the existence of a powerful entity with organized power. Savage stressed the ways in which the church and politics have historically been in conflict, but managed to cooperate in resistance to systematic oppression. The American African church intersected with political powers because religious leaders were publicly active in politics and used faith to confront social ills rather than run from them. The American African church must understand where spirituality and religious intersect and contradict. It must challenge its leaders to build individual agencies in its congregation and members. If the church hopes to maintain relevancy among the millennials, its leaders and members must honor its social function while breathing modern life into its methods. I maintain that the church itself, the way it is constituted and practiced, the church will never change. I recognize there are some churches. Like I said, I mentioned the African Centered Church. There are some individuals in Christian religion who practice liberation theology. The Shrine of the Black Madonna, Reverend Clee, when he started that. There are some who practice religion, practice liberation theology, because they believe that they can utilize the Christian religion and shape that in a way that it speaks to us in our condition. But because the foundation of it is shaky at best, the foundation of it, how it was formulated, how it was taken from other theologies, other concepts, other historical things that happened, and formulated into the, to me, you know, it's like using a screwdriver when you need a hammer. I use that kind of analogy. You need a damn hammer, but you got a screwdriver. Okay, you could use the handle of the screwdriver to try to pound something, but it ain't working because you need a damn hammer. And so utilizing the Christian religion for the liberation of African people, it is not going to happen. That's why I'm saying, if you are a Christian, be the best Christian that you can be from that theological standpoint. But if you are African and you are Christian, put your Christianity, do your worship, believe in it as you will and so forth. But if it deters you or prevents you from coming together and for doing what is necessary to help move African people forward, and I'm sorry. Because that's what we need. If you are in tune with your spirituality and how you operate your spirituality in reference to how we are as a people, then you, I'm sorry, I don't think you could believe in a system that does not help you or make you fight for your liberation. Knowing that, I'm sorry, but I can't see these Caucasians who have given us Christianity, giving us something that was good for us and a salvation for us. I'm sorry. Stop it, y'all. I don't want anything that the crackers has given us. Especially a religion tied to them that makes us docile, that makes us meek and believe that the meek shall inherit the earth. So we don't fight for liberation. We just pray for the by and by. Damn it. Let me say this on that piece. If it's that deep, I hope the damn tribulation happens today. I hope Armageddon happens today. No, I ain't going to be saved because I don't believe. But I don't give a damn. Because this is an evil world. Run by evil people. And what made Europeans great and the ability to do what they've done is through a religion that they've imposed upon the world. And we have accepted that. And we believe that we can liberate ourselves in something that they gave us, something they imposed upon us, something they made us believe. Now, I understand what many of the brothers who looked at the religion and looked at the writings, and believe me, there's always things that are lost in translation. And so therefore, getting a book now in English, when it was in Hebrew, when it was in Aramaic, when it was in all these other languages, Latin and so forth, there's something lost in translation. But we use that book and we believe that we could liberate ourselves through that book. Looking at those stories instead of looking at Moses, which was not historical. Noah, not historical. But looking at these stories of Abraham, not historical, but looking at these people and saying, and then putting an African face on it, that is us. That's why I have a problem with the ancient Kemetic kings and queens and the ancient Kemetic society being evil. Based on Christianity. Being evil. Supposedly putting Hebrews in captivity. In bondage. In servitude. Having them build temples and tombs. Couldn't have been built because they had long stopped building pyramids by the time this particular story supposedly had happened. Supposedly when this story had happened was the 18th dynasty of Ramesses, the son of Seti the First. You know, supposedly that was that time. And everything was in place. And supposedly they stayed there for hundreds of years. And they would one day get a deliverer. Just like Pharaoh supposedly killed when he was told that a deliverer was coming, was killing all the male children. And of course, Moses was sent in a basket and went down river, and of course, the Pharaoh's sister. I don't know the stories of the Bible too, you know, that great. I know the gist of it. I can give you the gist of it. His sister takes him out of the water and raises him in the house of Pharaoh. He became so good. I mean, she finds this baby. Let me say this to y'all, and y'all know it. And so, you know, some of these stories, I don't know if the original is more true to form, but because they may have been, once again, lost in translation. But some of these stories, you damn it, you know in your right mind could never have happened physically. Could never have happened physically. And so he was raised in the house of Pharaoh to the point that Pharaoh loved him as much as he loved his own son. But then, of course, he was found out. He found out that he was not Egyptian, but he was Hebrew. Then, of course, he was kicked out of Kemet and left to wander in the desert and came upon oasis. And then, of course, they helped him, and then he helped the people who helped him and got a wife or two or whatever. And in Mount Ararat, he was being summoned by God. And he goes up there and gets instruction to tell him to go back to Egypt and tell them to let my people go. And then in the story, as they read the Bible, as if you've ever watched, I mean, I watch, you know, Ten Commandments every Easter time because it's Passover time. And I remember when I first saw it as a kid at the theater in CinemaScope, Technicolor and CinemaScope, all that kind of stuff. So he hardens Pharaoh's heart. I mean, damn, God, if you know what you could have done, you could have enlightened Pharaoh. What you could have done is to show Pharaoh that you are true God. And what Pharaoh, if you God, why are you a mischief maker, God? Why do you play with the emotions of the human family, God? And why don't you embrace the whole human? Why didn't you, instead of coming to a people who now call themselves chosen, because I sure in hell don't believe in a God that chooses one group of people over another. That ain't God. We're the chosen people. Give me a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. These are tough. I know. It's tough for me to speak in this way because I know it is offensive because to challenge one's religion. That's why it's important that your religion is what makes you feel good about who you are internally and spiritually. And if you profess that, and because you profess that, you're going, then you're fine. But don't proselytize it. Don't impose it on anybody. Don't make it think that whatever anybody else has is no good because what you have is superior. The two main proselytizing religions, Islam and Christianity, there is fault. They both seek converts because they both have the idea that they are. And of course, I mean, even Islam, the development of Islam comes out of what? Abraham. Abraham is the father of all three religions. Abraham, you got a caller? Good afternoon, caller. 646.
Hey, good afternoon, brother Oshi. You know, the white man always think he God. You know, and the thing is, black folks need to let that pale-skinned devil think he God and leave that stuff alone because it ain't never been good for us. And the sad thing is, we don't realize it. Because I could never understand how could I ever accept something that my oppressor gave to me.
That's right.
And that's something that these Christians just haven't been able to figure out. But, you know, maybe they will figure it out one day. But then again, you know, they looking to get closer and closer to the Sky Daddy. And the Sky Daddy, to me, I don't think got nothing for him. But you know, you never know. You never know. You know, the mystery at itself.
Well, the thing is this. I don't think so. I mean, unless there is some real mysticism, something that really is miraculous going to happen, some revelation, some visual, something, whatever. I don't see it. In fact, brother, I look at it like this. When they talk about stuff that happened in the Bible in the past, all the miracles and so forth, which of course did not happen, but damn it, we need a miracle today. How about right now? You know?
There you go.
How about right at this damn moment? We need a miracle right now. And if you...
How could you be the children of God and God allow you to constantly have a foot in your ass? That don't make sense to me. I can't understand. Why would your God allow you to constantly be oppressed and brutalized by one individual? Don't you think at one point in time he would put his foot down and say enough is enough? I mean, that's just simple logic, man. Don't you think at some point in time he would have stopped the brutalization of his chosen people or his people or what? Those that he is supposed to be the daddy of? I mean, that's all nothing but some mystical BS, man, that unfortunately we done got caught up in.
And that's the problem. That's our problem.
How you gonna use a Bible to justify doing all the wicked stuff that this pale skinned devil's done? You know what I mean? And then flip it around and give it to the oppressed people to say, well, you use this to say it's all right to take this type of oppression. Because if you pray to the Sky Daddy, at some point in time, he's going to come and say, that's stupidity. But hey, man, that's the way it is, you know? But hey, listen, man, we got to do something to, you know, keep ourselves in the position of not going insane, and they have to do something to keep us in that position from fighting back and doing what we're supposed to do, which is doing what my great brothers in South Africa at one time did in the PNC, use some burning neckties. You know, I mean, that's our problem. We just don't fight back against our oppressor, man. We just accept whatever he does to us and wait for the Sky Daddy to come and save us, and then, you know, go on and, you know, just say, hey, it is what it is. But you were talking earlier in regards about going back home and building up, you know, home. You know, I would hope at some point in time we would identify an African country, you know, on the continent, and, you know, make some sort of allegiance with one of these countries and, you know, go to, like I say, these soroids and these fraternities, and I'll say, look, we've identified an African country, and it's time for y'all to get off the pot and let's come together and let's go build that African country. Now, what are you going to get in return? You're going to get free housing, free food, free whatever. The same thing that y'all Negroes pay for here. You know, we're going to give you free medical, free dental, and all of that. Because, you know, if you really take into consideration, everything that most people do in this country is predicated on what? Housing, food, and medical, and simple luxury. Because most people, all the hell they ever do is go to work, come home, sit in front of the TV, and those that don't sit in front of the TV play video games. Those that don't sit in front of the video games, they listen to music or read a book, and that's it. You know, and then go to bed, eat dinner, and then, you know, that's it. So it's a perpetual motion of just doing those things. So why can't we identify African country and a country that has the resources and say to a group of individuals in this country, we're going to provide you with the same type of luxuries that you have in this country for free. All you have to do is come over and give us your skill set, and hey, let's build this country. Because, you know, if you're able to provide those things, I think if it's presented in its proper fashion, it could happen. Because remember, you got satellite TV, so it's not like you're not going to be able to watch your favorite shows. If you think about it, it's not like you ain't going to be able to hear your favorite music. And, you know, you just go about the same business as you would do over in this country, hustling and bustling. You know what I mean? But you're doing it over there for free, and you're building up a country.
I agree.
But we don't think on that level.
No, we don't, because we've been trained not to, and I agree with you.
Not at all.
You know, I know Ghana has right of return. And you can have dual citizenship in Ghana and a few other African countries, Tanzania, you know. But the bottom line is this. We're looking at least as far as I'm concerned, we're looking at the continent itself. We're looking at the continent unification of itself, with the exception of probably Northern Africa, because now who controls Northern Africa are people who consider themselves Caucasian, even though they're Arabs. Or they're very dark-skinned people themselves, but the initial inhabitants of Northern Africa suffer. They are suffering, you know, but that's another subject. But let's look at what we could do as a people going home to build Africa. Regardless of the theologies that are there, you know, because Islam has a serious stronghold, as well as...
Yeah.
African spiritual religions and so forth. But let's just put the religion.
Christianity too.
Oh, Christianity is deep. I just mentioned the fact that in Christian religion, they have, particularly in Ghana, they had these posters that I haven't seen them on my last trip. But I never forget my first trip to Ghana, you know, to see those posters of Caucasian Jesus, just billboards of Caucasian Jesus, just bothered the hell out of me, you know.
But you know what you got to watch out for that people don't realize, but it's coming there in Africa because of the Chinese Buddhism. Watch out for Buddhism becoming a spreading practice of religion on the continent because of the Chinese.
That's a good point, because the Chinese are heavy in Africa. Last week I mentioned the fact that there are Chinese who are marrying Ugandan women. Chinese are marrying Ugandan women, having children by them, so they can make their claim of the land.
Right?
Huh?
You know what that means? That means within 20 to 30 years, they will absolutely control Uganda.
Exactly.
You know that.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, but we don't understand that right now. We won't stand up at this time and tell the Ugandan people, you got to put an end to this right now, because what it's going to do is it's going to cause your country to be colonized by the damn Chinese.
Well,
and the truth of the matter is, it's going to spread to the surrounding countries around you. Watch. That's what's going to happen. Believe me, it just takes one to get it popping. And that's what's going to happen. And unfortunately, it's sad that, you know, we're not in a position with all of the information that we have to be able to educate the Uganda people on what's about to go down and what's going to happen to them. Because it's going to happen, believe me.
Well, you know, some of the Ugandan people, they realize what's going down, and they're making it known this is a issue. This is a problem that they see in the future of what's going to happen to them and in their country. You know, I think that in my vision is that we kick everybody out. We kicking the Chinese out. We kicking the British. We kicking the Germans. We kicking the Italians. We whoever's up in there ain't us. We kicking them out. You know, because it's a damn shame that nowhere on the planet have we claimed somebody's land and made ourselves sufficient or sovereign on somebody else's land. Nowhere on this planet. Hell, in America, we don't have any place like we had in Rosewood or Tulsa or Elaine, Arkansas, Allentown in California, you know, or even more contemporary, the Haiti community in Raleigh, Durham. Nowhere in this
but
country
you know
do
it's
we.
So funny.
Go ahead.
You know, it's so funny. The Nation of Islam always talking that BS about the government giving them some land, and they think that they're going to create a Rosewood or anything of that nature. It ain't going to happen. And the honest truth of the matter is, the white boy won't allow them to. And you know something? And I'm the type of person that believes that they should take their behinds back home and build up home. Just like I know this, and I have no issues with it at all. I live in New York, right? I know a whole bunch of people that are Haitians, Jamaicans, and other parts of the islands. They come here, they work for 20, 30 years, they get pensions. Now they really can't do it because they're not giving pensions like they did before. And what they do is they get their pension and they go back home and they build up their homeland. And it's funny because I had a couple of friends of mine that I knew over the years, man, that I just got in touch with that, you know, have had some problems because of this last hurricane. And, you know, their homes were kind of messed up and things like that, you know. So the thing is this. You got a lot of people who have come to this country, who have made money and go back home, and they live better lives. We the only people who never think about building any type of wealth here and going back and building home. And we got to start looking homeward bound. It's a song, right, by this brother called Kenny Burke. You need to listen to this song. And the song is called Keep Rising to the Top. Listen to the words of that song. And that song is giving us direction on going back home. You got to really listen to the lyrics of it. And if you ever get a chance, listen to the song and study the lyrics. And what he's telling us is to go back home and build up home.
Who is this now? What's the name of this song? Keep Rising?
It's Keep Rising to the Top. And the artist's name is Kenny Burke.
Kenny Burke. Okay, I'm going to look
yeah,
that up.
You got to listen to the song and really study it and listen to what he's saying. He's telling us to go back home. But, you know, the thing is this, though, like you were saying, Brother Ochi, do you know that we in certain African countries produce all sorts of minerals? And do you know none of those minerals that we produce, we have control of them? It's like cocoa. We don't even have control of the cocoa that we produce on the continent. That bugged me out.
Yeah,
I was
in Ghana and at a cocoa farm. I don't call it a plantation. That word, see, to me, words give meaning, words give vision, words give images, and that's why it's important for us to use the correct word. That's why I don't use the word black, because we ain't black. We're African. That's why I don't use the word white to describe them, because they ain't white. They Caucasian. They Europeans. Exactly.
You know, Caucasoid is a better word.
Caucasoid. You like that one? You like that one? Okay.
Yeah, I really like Neanderthal knuckle dragger, but you know, you got to be political correct. So I fluctuate between the pale-skinned devil and the Caucasoid. But then, you know, back in the day, we used to use Yaku. But you know,
right,
like our great brother and great teacher and sister, Marimba Adi, you know, they pegged them right as the Yoruba. But you know, our people ain't ready for certain words, so you gotta use a little shock value when you talk about this devil. So you gotta call them Caucasoid, pale skin, peckerwood, you know, just certain things. You know, but we know what they are. They the beasts.
That's what they are. And go ahead.
Nah, but you know the thing is that you know, I didn't know that. I thought, you know, because when I went to Africa, because I got the opportunity to go to Africa many years ago, and it was these brothers that were opening up a Nestle, well, they were buying the Nestle plant to purchase, well, they were buying the Nestle plant to manufacture cocoa in the United States up in, I think it was Schenectady, New York, or Albany. Well, it was up there. Well, I worked with them or did something with them, and I got the opportunity to go. And the thing was that they really couldn't do anything and make the type of moves that they wanted to move distribution-wise because they was caught up in a situation to where as the prices in all sorts of, you know, markets were controlled by the white folks. It was crazy. So it was they could only manufacture a certain amount, produce a certain amount, and put a certain amount into public. You know what I mean? Because the white folks had total control of it over there in Europe.
And that's the thing. They dominate. If it's not for the material that makes it happen, it don't happen for them. But once they got the materials, they just like diamonds. Diamonds are not rare. Yep. They made diamonds rare. Diamonds aren't worth any. There's like any other little stone that's on, you know, but they made it such. It's the same as cocoa. Like I said, when I was sitting at that cocoa farm and realizing that we have all the raw materials, but we don't produce nothing. We're not producers. Africa needs people in that continent to produce something. And that's why I maintain that once we do what I'm talking about doing, and which all of our scholars and African-centered scholars and leaders and historians and whatever said, this is what we must do. We must go home, break the chains that these crackers have on our minds, and go home to build our own and control our resources. We should be damn Cadbury's, damn Nestle's, damn Hershey's, damn all of them. They have all of that because of what we have produced.
But you know what the problem? You know what the problem is that Brother Oshie is? It's the greatest idea. But you know the one thing that will hinder that is that unfortunately we as a people are not humble enough to step aside and figure out who should be the spokesperson and the head of the project and be able to collectively work in the background to make it do what it do. There gotta be too many, you know, chiefs and not enough Indians.
Well, see, that's
our biggest problem.
See, but that's why I maintain that we don't look for a individual spokespersons, that we have a cadre of leadership, because if they knock off one, we continue to turn the page and keep on moving. I got to run, brother.
But we haven't been able to do that.
Right, you're right.
Brother, and I'll speak to you later in the week.
All right, my brother. Peace always. I appreciate you. Thank you for listening. We're about ready to close the program out, as we always do, with the words of Stephen Biko. You know, just because my brother was saying that, you know, this is what we must do. And it's sad. It is sad that we don't see it and really strive to do it because we continue to beg this system. We put all our energy, all our efforts into begging these Caucasians to respect us. Respect our humanity. Treat us fairly. Treat us honestly. It hasn't happened. It ain't happening now. And damn it, it ain't going to happen. We close this program with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, and not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E. the resources that are under the feet of African people that we must control. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Esante Sana, thank you. Bye, family.